FMA OK. Today on the stream, a mysterious condition or illness known as long COVID. We will be looking at the physical and mental impact of long COVID. And how is research doing? How much more do we know at this stage? We start our conversation with Ravi.
I've now been seriously ill with long COVID for 11 months, and this illness has taken my life away. Prior to falling ill, I was a healthy and active 22-year-old, but I now have to spend up to 16 hours a day in bed. I'm unable to do almost any of the things which used to make life meaningful, from writing and seeing friends to dating.
We have so much more to say about long COVID with Risha, Noreen, Dr. Assad. Thank you all for being on the stream today. Risha, please introduce yourself to our audience. Tell them who you are, what you do, and your connection to long COVID.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Risha Pretorius. I'm from Stellenbosch University. I am a researcher in physiology, and my interest in long COVID has started long before when I started looking at coagulation in various diseases.
Thank you for being with us. Noreen, nice to have you on the stream. Please, will you introduce yourself to our audience and your connection to long COVID?
My name's Noreen Jamil. I'm a journalist. I have been a foreign journalist for about 20 years. I ended up with long COVID last year and started a podcast to try and disseminate information because people don't know about this new disease at all.
Thank you for being with us. And Dr. Assad, finally, please introduce yourself and your connection to long COVID.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Assad Khan. I'm a respiratory physician, or as you would call them in the US, a pulmonologist. So my connection with COVID started off by being a doctor in the beginning of the pandemic through the first and second waves. Then I acquired acute COVID in November 2020, which then progressed to long COVID, which I still suffer from, but I have now become somewhat of a patient advocate and researcher. I would like to say I have cognitive impairment, which may be reflected in what you see this evening, if I have difficulty with words.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. We're going to dig a little bit deeper into what long COVID actually means with you, audience, as well. You have questions, you've got comments, you have experiences. The comment section is right here. I do my best to wrap your thoughts, your ideas into this show. We have three excellent guests who will do their best to answer your questions as well. First question for you then, Dr. Assad. Not usual for somebody who's not a doctor to ask you this, but how are you feeling?
I am feeling better, but that is relative.
Okay.
So at my worst, back in August, I was lying in a darkened room. I was completely intolerant of light and sound, and I was unable to tolerate any food or drink. I was rapidly losing weight, and I felt like I was on my way out. Since coming to Germany in September, and I have been here more or less all the time since then, apart from a very brief period over New Year's, when I was in the UK for a week and I relapsed, I have improved to the extent that I am now housebound mostly. I would say I'm about 50 to 60% bedbound. I can function in that I can look after myself, but that is about it. I cannot foresee the possibility of returning to work anytime in the foreseeable future. I have no role within family life, and my social interactions are extremely limited. I have to keep lying down every 20 to 30 minutes just to get enough blood to my brain, and that is an improvement. And this is somebody who is probably under the best team in the world looking after long COVID, and even they are struggling to get on top of my illness, which is why it's so important that we understand it and we get in and treat it early.
Every time I ask somebody about long COVID or I read about long COVID, the symptoms, the experience of it is very different. Noreen, when did you know you had long COVID? How could you even tell?
I couldn't. So yeah. I had a very mild case of COVID again in November 2020. I didn't even have a fever. I was out of bed after 3 days. I thought this was okay. I was quite lucky. About 6 to 8 weeks later, I found that I couldn't walk up the stairs without kind of being breathless. And, you know, being a lady of a certain age and gender and race, I thought, okay, so it's my heart. I better go and have this checked out. And I walked into a cardiologist, and I was really lucky. My husband has a good company that provides private healthcare, and I was able during the pandemic to see a cardiologist. He sat me down, looked at my symptoms, and he said, you are a typical patient that I'm seeing now that are coming through my door. You have long COVID. And that was shocking because I thought I had gotten away with COVID and I didn't realize that my COVID had caused these cardiac symptoms. And they're still ongoing today. And I had other symptoms that kind of progressed as the months went on. But yeah, that was the first time I heard the word long COVID, and I was diagnosed very quickly, unlike so many people that have COVID, long COVID.
Risha, I'm going to bring another voice here. This is Lauren Nichols. She's basically saying and talking about what long COVID does to your life, what the impact is. Have a listen to Lauren, and then I'd love your reaction immediately off the back of this video. Here's Lauren.
We are seeing suicidal ideation at the challenges of living this virus day in and out for months and for years for some of us without any treatment, without a known prognosis. We are seeing depression as a result of having to adjust to a life of disability that for many of us is completely foreign and exceedingly difficult to navigate, including its impact on our careers, on our family life, and therefore on our mental health.
Yes, Lauren just tells it exactly how it is. One of the things that she mentioned is that she felt depressed, but the issue, the reason why she's feeling depressed is because she probably don't get enough information from the healthcare professionals to look at a diagnostic. One of the important things for many of these individuals suffering from long COVID is that they will go feeling really devastating sick, the disease ravaging their bodies, and they do not get, in some instances, a diagnosis. That will impact not only on their body function, their physiology, how they feel, and as Asad mentioned, really being very, very sick, it can also impact on their psychology. However, the important thing that we need to talk about is that the effects that long COVID patients see is not because of their psychological state. Their psychological state is because of the demoralizing effects of the disease. And currently, unfortunately, there are no diagnoses for individuals suffering from long COVID that they can go to a regular pathology laboratory. It's wonderful that in some instances, individuals can in fact go to doctors and that they can tell a patient you have long COVID. Unfortunately, it's not the case for many people.
Unfortunately,
Asad, you go first, Noreen, you go second.
I guess what I was saying was that unfortunately, because there aren't any easily accessible diagnostic tests, immediately we get labeled as psychologically unwell. I mean, to me, it's fascinating that 100 million people over the world have suddenly signed a pact to become psychologically unwell and take to their beds. We need to understand that people can be very, very sick with normal tests. And normal tests is not a diagnosis. We are practicing lazy medicine. Our focus has become reassure and discharge and move on, rather than looking a bit deeper. And if you look harder, you will find that there are serious abnormalities affecting all parts of the body. And a lot of it is down to disorders of coagulation, which is sort of linked in with the work that Risia has done.
Okay. Noreen, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say that Lauren was right. People are demoralized because there is no information out there. This is exactly why we started the long COVID sessions. So we could access the latest information, the doctors, the latest research, talk about symptoms, explain to people what is going on in their body and try and offer some kind of comfort in the idea that they're not alone. And there are people out there that are working hard to find out what's going on in their bodies.
I'm really glad you said that. I've got Mirza Agic, who is on YouTube right now. When you say, what is going on in your body? Mirza said, well, how do you treat long COVID if everyone has different symptoms? When you were doing your podcast, Noreen, is that something that you actually looked at? Like, how do you look at treatment?
Every week.
That's the podcast.
So, exactly. So, I mean, so there's so many different people. I mean, Asad is right. There is the idea that doctors are not taking us seriously, which is one aspect. But there are many other doctors that are working hard to try and find out what the mechanisms are behind long COVID. But at the moment, as with a lot of diseases or syndromes, and syndrome is an umbrella term for when a doctor doesn't actually know what's going on. So he just says, you have a syndrome.
Oh, okay.
He's included all these different symptoms.
Yeah,
So, I mean, I hear that time and time again from these physicians, which is great because they're being very candid. But the idea is that we can give this information to people by just looking at an individual symptom. Say, okay, you have a cardiac symptom. Let's talk to a cardiologist. What's going on? You have neurological symptoms, brain fog. Let's talk about what's going on in your brain. And, you know, that's the only
absolutely,
way.
Absolutely, I agree. I absolutely agree that the clinicians think it is they call it a syndrome, but the issue is that we must look closer at what happens to all of these individuals. If we look at the patients from a physiological point of view, we have noted that they have got persistent symptoms that all can be found traced back to what is happening in blood and in circulation. So in our research, we found that if we look at the blood samples of these individuals, all of them, every single one that I have looked at that has got confirmed long COVID has got microclots in circulation. And if you look at the microclots in circulation...
So, Risha, I'm just going to back up a little bit. So is this your theory? This is your research? Because people are going to be watching this who have long COVID. Mm. So I want to be very careful about what we're doing here, right? This is like... If this is a theory, I'm really happy to hear it. I'm really happy to hear any research that is being done. But I do also am very aware that people are vulnerable who are listening to this. So if you couch it in your research and then what you believe you are seeing in your research, that would be very helpful. And then you can explain what microclots are.
Okay, so during 2021, so let me talk about the research, what we have found and what we have published. Mm-hmm. So during 2021, my research group, in collaboration with various researchers, including Professor Douglas Kell, found that in long COVID patients, in their blood, there are microclots that are in circulation. And we found inside the microclots, trapped inside these microclots, are molecules that prevent the microclots from breaking down. Many other researchers have found other types of molecules in circulation, for example, autoantibodies that might be linked to the disease. But if we think about the microclots, autoantibodies, and all of the molecules that might be in circulation, these molecules might be causing cells of the body to not have enough oxygen, which is called hypoxia.
All right, so Risha, what I'm hearing is it might be causing multiple symptoms.
And
the possibility is that it may be linked to the blood. I want to make sure that this is accessible for everybody. I'm going to bring in Asad. I'm going to put something to you, if I may. Then you can come off the back of it immediately, because I am wondering what research is being done, and I know you want to come in on that. But I'm going to go via Ziad, who is the Chief of Research and Development at the VA St. Louis Healthcare System. What do we know now? What do we know for sure now, Asad? Here is Ziad, first of all.
We need the establishment of long COVID clinics to take care of these patients. We also need more research to better understand long COVID. We've seen a few days ago the relaunch by the US government of the cancer moonshot. That's absolutely amazing. It's going to help advance research and treatment for cancer. We need an equivalent effort by the US government and other governments around the world to galvanize research on long COVID so we can better understand it and treat it. We need a long COVID moonshot.
So what we do know is that, so let me first of all talk about what this is not, okay? Mm-hmm. So it is not psychological, just in the same way that ME and fibromyalgia and POTS are not psychological. What we do know is that exercise and talking therapies are not going to fix this. What we do know is that every single patient with a clinician's diagnosis of long COVID, whose blood has been looked at under fluorescent microscopy, has these microclots and has these hyperactivated platelets, including myself. So that's the picture of my microclots.
All right, I can't see them very well, but they look like little green dots, okay, on your phone.
Yes. All right, yes. Okay. And this is after 3 months of treatment.
Okay.
So people's blood is flooded with these, and we know what to do with them. What we need, we have the drugs available, but the problem is that to trial these drugs, it takes so long to get the funding, to get the ethical approval. And meanwhile, people are suffering, and then they are becoming depressed and suicidal as a result of that. So what we need are small, agile, quickly funded, quickly ethically approved trials that people can take part in, that can then inform treatment, because people are not going to get better on their own. We have to treat what we know is there, and there is no doubt that the clotting phenomena are present. Now, the longer we leave it, the harder it's going to get to eradicate things. Then you will end up with things like viral persistence, like autoimmune pathology that is proving difficult to control. So there is a real urgency here. This is a mass disabling event, and we are going to lose an entire generation to chronic illness and disability if we do not get off our backsides and treat this straight away.
Can I just put my journalist hat on at this point and say, when you say everyone whose blood is tested has microclots, the numbers of people who have that are being tested are very small. And there are lots of different theories about what is happening in people with long COVID. Betty Rahman at the Oxford Clinic is working with Axella, looking at mitochondria, for example, which is the tiny cells that are the engines of our bodies, and those seem to be impaired, and they're working on that. And there's a Dr. Akiko Isawaka at Yale is looking at vaccines and how that might help long COVID patients because of viral persistence. There are microclots. They have been found in certain people that have been lucky enough to be tested. But the mechanisms behind why people have the microclots is unknown. So can I just say that you are right, Femi, when you say that this is a very vulnerable cohort of people, millions of people. There's millions in the US, 1.3 million in the UK. And if you extrapolate that out across the world, talking about a lot of people. And these are desperate people. And at the moment, all treatments for long COVID are experimental, simply because it's such a new disease. And some of them are expensive, and people are spending their life savings trying to go and have treatments like Dr. Kahn in Germany, of which he's having his blood cleaned through a treatment called apheresis, where the blood is filtered out and the clots are removed. But as you can see, he's not better. So it's really, you know, yes, we should be moving forward at pace, but we need to be also cautious and careful with what we say, you know, because, for example, on the TLC sessions, we're really careful about who we interview and what we give out to people in terms of information. It has to be solid medical information that we can share with people, because we're really acutely aware that people are desperate. It's been 2 years now for some people.
There's more than one.
So can I just clarify? I am better. I am better, but obviously I'm not cured. Yeah. Yes, the numbers of patients where we have looked at microclots are small, but then the logical thing to do is to look at bigger numbers and replicate those findings across the world.
And Dr. Assad, what I'm thinking here is, here you are, as somebody with long COVID, doing your own research and working on something to help you get better as a patient advocate. There is a bigger picture here about if, and the stats that I'm looking at, is perhaps 1 in 10, as many as 1 in 10 people who have COVID end up with long COVID. So that is a huge global problem for all of us, even if we don't recognise it at this stage. I'm going to bring in Dr. Elizabeth Yuko, because I also want to talk about the personal, the social part of having long COVID. That is really important too. Here's Elizabeth, first of all.
This is about more than jobs. This is about financial insecurity. And it's more than not being able to pay your bills, I've spoken with several people with long COVID who first lost their job and their income and then their home and have to live with these debilitating symptoms in their car or a tent. The system is broken, but we have the opportunity to fix it. And employers can take the lead by enacting policies that treat people with long COVID and other chronic and invisible illnesses like humans instead of burdens.
Let's talk about how people treat you when you have long COVID. Dr. Assad, you are not working right now. How did that go down with your job?
I have to say that my employer so far have been supportive. But I don't know how long that's going to last, because in England, certainly the legislation is that it's full pay for a year. And then after that, it's the discretion of the employer. But if the government decides, well, actually, we're not going to pay people anymore, then I could be out of a job any minute. And the tragedy here is that I got this from work and that this was entirely preventable. And as my colleague, Dr. Yakulavsha, says, and as my treating physician, Dr. Beata Yeager, say, the best treatment of long COVID is to prevent it. So you stop people getting COVID. And what's happening, take, for example, schools, okay, in the UK. We have 117,000 children with long COVID in the UK. You know, one of my closest friends, her daughter was a gymnast, and now she has to have a wheelchair just to get out of the house. There is no masking. There is no ventilation in schools. So we're not actually stopping people getting COVID. They are going to go on to get long COVID.
I hear you. Let me add another story to the story that you just shared. And this is one from Ella Sloman, who's on YouTube. I've had long COVID for over a year. I can't work and things are desperate. All right. So I've got a couple of YouTube questions and queries. Noreen, I'm going to give one to you. Is this long COVID? This one comes from Anna. Is this situation justification for warp speeding the entire endeavour? Research, speeding up research. We did this for the vaccines. That was sped up. Vaccines turned up long before anybody thought we could have vaccines. Should this be the same for long COVID? What have you found from your podcast research and the interviews that you've done? Just very briefly.
Yes, it is being actually surprisingly warp-speeded. Like the amount of research that's and focus on long COVID is massive in terms of this scientific community. Because if you look at diseases that other post-viral diseases that went before us, ME, myelogic encephalitis, and then chronic fatigue syndrome, they were neglected. But long COVID has actually got some focus, and that's positive. Like, we have to take the positives, and we have to be positive because it's a new disease. And, you know, in this pandemic, in the first wave, people were dying in their thousands, and they are still up in the US today. I think it's still 2,000 are dying every day. And it's just, you know, the idea that long COVID can wait is something that the governments like to promote, but the scientific community are not waiting. They are trying to make inroads into the disease.
I think the tragedy here is that it's having to be pushed by people who are sick and who don't have the reserves to do this, when actually this should be the focus and the responsibility of those in government. Because this is the next pandemic. It's ongoing. It's not over.
Risha, I totally agree with Assad.
Yeah, just very quickly, Eddie wanted to know, can he get tested for microclots? Is that even possible? That's going to be a yes or a no from you, Risha. Is that possible? Can that be done?
Currently, it's only a research method, but we're working very hard to get it in the USA, the UK, and the rest of the world.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Risha, Noreen, and Dr. Assad, really talking about where we are with long COVID from their personal experience and their research experience as well. Thank you, YouTube commenters, for being part of the program too. Appreciate you. I'll see you next time. Take care.